The hour of 8 a.m. having arrived, I'm going to call the Committee on Government Operations, Reform, Technology, and Elections to order. And with that, we have, members, a couple of bills that may take us a little bit of time. The first is House File 1048. I'm going to present the bill. I'm going to turn the committee over to Representative Morgan. But before I do that, I'm going to move that House File 1048 be recommended to pass and be re-referred to the Finance Committee. And with that, I'll go up and I will join the commissioner. Mr. Representative Morgan will take over.
Thank you, Representative Pawlowski. HF 1048 has been moved, and would you like to present your bill?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members of the committee, this bill comes to us as a result of an initiative started by the governor to reform and consolidate services in government. I want to thank Commissioner Pat Anderson. We met with her about 3 weeks ago to start this process. Mr. Malander, Mr. Shepard, and I and Commissioner Anderson met, and we thought this would probably take the better part of a year. She's accomplished it in 3 weeks, which is commendable. I'm going to let her walk through the bill and what has happened, and then we may have some people to testify, and I believe, Mr. Chair, we may have one or two small amendments.
Thank you. Commissioner Anderson?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm Pat Anderson. I'm the Commissioner of Employee Relations. I'm pleased to come before you with this. This House file abolishes the Department of Employee Relations, and it merges its functions into other state agencies. Namely, it merges it, most of it into finance, but also into the admin and the Department of Health. You have in your packets the report, the full report, and the governor's press release from last Wednesday's unveiling of the merger. The report outlines the plan's specifics, but most of it's in the press release. This initiative, it's been a really dynamic process involving many people. As Representative Pawlowski discussed, we met as a group. We also involved the state employee unions. We involved other agencies, other legislators, both in the House and Senate. And what we have here is a good bipartisan piece of legislation that I believe will help reform government and sort of bring us into the 21st century. As you know, for those of you that have been here a while, this has been discussed for a long, long time. You can go all the way back to the core report under Governor Carlson. He had a variety of suggestions on merging some of these agencies. If you go back to LEAP, when DOER was founded, there are some things in the LEAP report that were not implemented that this actually does do. It talks about bringing some of the payroll functions together with the HR. This does that. It brings payroll together with HR. I'm also pleased to state that we do have complete support with most of the employee unions. MAPE's Jim Monroe was at the press conference expressing his support. Today in the audience, Morgan Fleming is here with MMA, and he is also on board this legislation. And Ashley's not here, but I think that they're not here to protest either. And we've been meeting with them regularly, and I think that they're okay with this. And very quickly, in a nutshell, DOER is really five divisions. It's labor relations and compensation. It's human resources management, employee insurance, workers' comp, and then again the Center for Healthcare Purchasing. And I think it's important. It was very important going through this process that we brought the three main groups. We kept them together: labor relations, HR, and employee insurance. And that does exist, and they'll be brought in with finance. Some interesting things to note, which I found out as I became commissioner, is that we already currently work very closely with finance. In fact, we have finance staff on our floor that we manage in DOER that work together on the semaphore system and others. We are already working very, very closely with the Department of Finance. It made sense to to make this work. The Workers' Comp Division has proposed to go to the Department of Administration. They currently do other insurance. They do risk management, and this would just align all the insurance internally. And again, we have the Center for Healthcare Purchasing, which was formed last legislative session, and they are really a think tank as it relates to health issues and healthcare buying for state employees and for Minnesota as a whole. They work very closely with the Department of Health currently, and they're proposed to go to the Department of Health, and their management is here. I just want to, again, thank everyone. We brought this together in a very short period of time. We did it. It's a very good piece of bipartisan reform legislation, and I hope that we have your support. There are a few amendments. Would you like me to go over them?
Thank you, Commissioner. Representative Plasky, do you have an office amendment?
The A4 amendment is the Commissioner's First Amendment. Is that the one you'd like to put on first, the A4?
Yes.
Commissioner Anderson?
Thank you.
Mr. Chair,
if you hold on just a moment, please. Let's move the amendment. Thank you. Representative Plasky moves the A4 amendment, and would you like to explain the amendment?
I think we'll have the Commissioner explain it, Mr. Chair, and then...
Does everybody have a copy of the amendment to A4? Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The A4 amendment simply changes the date from June 30th of 2008 to June 1st of 2008, and this was done at the request of Finance. Even though I told them it will be done before that, they want to make sure that we're not doing this at the end of their fiscal year and bombarding them with extra. So that's what this does, and it also adds the name of the Commissioner of Finance and some of the language about some of the other duties. Then the bottom line on 1.9 is just a little clearer reviser language. It was in the original bill, and this is so these are minor things at the request of agencies out there.
All right. Are there any questions for the author or for the commissioner on the A4 amendment? Seeing none, all in favor of the A4 amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, say nay. The amendment is adopted.
Mr. Chair, I believe you have the A1 amendment, and I'm going to move the A1 amendment. I believe this is the amendment that Mr. Fleming, so if Mr. Fleming wants to come down and address that amendment.
Representative Pulaski moves the A1 amendment, and while the testifier comes down, does everybody have the A1 amendment? All right. Welcome to the committee. Would you please identify yourself and talk about the A1 amendment, please?
Sure. Good morning, Mr. Chairman of the committee. Morgan Fleming. I'm here on behalf of Middle Management, which are 2,600 state employees who aren't quite unclassified below commissioners. And then we have an AsME fellow with us, too.
Oh, wonderful.
Mr. Chair, members, I'm Mark McAfee, representing AsME Council 5.
Welcome, Mr. McAfee.
Thank you. We do support... this amendment, there was similar language that went through when Deed was organized a few years back. And we have, as far as the reorganization, we're neutral on that, or we have no objection to it with this sort of language. So thank you.
Thank you, Mr. McAfee. Mr. Fleming?
Yes, we work with the commissioner, the principals of our bargaining units, mine particularly, all of them have, and there's comity between us on these kinds of things. And I guess the sense is that employment levels will stay the same. And so this is just nice language to add.
Okay.
Thank you much.
Thank you very much. Are there any questions? Representative Broad.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I'm not sure, maybe Commissioner Anderson, you can help me out with this question. When I read this, I'm trying to understand, are we talking about specific people or jobs in terms of the employee definition?
Commissioner Anderson?
Let me start up by saying we did discuss this with the unions last week, and I said if they brought language that was... reasonable that I would support this, and I do support this language. I think it's reasonable. The way this reads is it's classified. I can tell you most of the employees that do are not classified, but it's been stated in the press release, the governor stated, there's There is not going to be any loss of jobs besides my own and a few at the top level, assistant commissioners and so on. The one thing we did want to have is the flexibility, because jobs could change for some of the people. And this does allow us to make those changes as long as they still have a job and not a salary reduction. And I think that, and it's not a lot of people, but there, it's going to exist. We may not need as many receptionists, for example. This does protect that, and I think that's what the unions support, and it's been stated many times that there isn't going to be loss of jobs in those. We have places that we want to shift them. We actually want to increase the HR role and function in Versailles here in the state of Minnesota, so there will be some shifting. And this does allow that.
Senator Brown?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Commissioner Anderson, maybe if you're the only one losing your job, maybe middle management can maybe help you out in representation as well. I didn't realize, Mr. Chair, that middle management had representation, so that's good to know. But maybe a little bit more clarification. What I'm trying to get to, are we talking about FTEs or specific people? Because what I'm concerned about is, or what I hear about is that our, you know, we have an aging workforce, and I want to make sure that, you know, we have in a system as attrition is what I'm talking about.
Thank you.
Commissioner Anderson.
Thank you. Representative, it's specifically people. And in this language, it is specifically classified people.
Representative Brad? Okay. I think if you'd hold on just a second, Representative Emmer, I think we'd like to turn to House Research or House Staff here. Mr. Shepherd, we have a concern about some of the language in this amendment. Would you care to share that with us?
Mr. Chair, members, I'd just suggest a technical change to this. The way this amendment is written, the worker protection language wouldn't become effective until July 1/09, which is when it's intended to expire. And so I would just suggest a technical change on this amendment, which would be to delete lines 9 and 10 of the amendment completely, and then in place of that, write a new language, which would read as follows. Page 2, line 6, delete, quote, and 2, and insert, quote, 2-3, so that this, if you look at the bill, on page 2, line 6 of the bill, it would read sections 1-3 are effective the day following final enactment. That would be the effect of that, to make all these sections effective immediately.
All right.
I will write that down, yes, Mr. Chair, you. And give it to Ms. Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Shepherd. Does everybody have that? Would you like Mr. Shepherd to repeat that? Representative Pulaski.
I'll move the language that Mr. Shepherd.
Representative Pulaski, as the author, moves the language that Mr. Shepherd recommends, and we can incorporate that into the amendment without a vote. Is that correct? With the author's consent. All right. Are there any objections to doing that? All right. Then so we will do that, and we'll incorporate that into the amendment. Thank you. Are there any other comments? Representative Emmer.
I have a couple of questions. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Commissioner, I have two questions. First, why is it significant that it's classified versus unclassified employees?
Commissioner Anderson?
The only reason it reads like that, Representative, is because that's the language that the unions wanted.
Representative Emmer.
Mr. Chairman, Commissioner, what I'm getting at is, because my second question is going to be, I can't believe that we're putting in language to protect jobs when, in fact, the whole purpose of this is to streamline the process. And I would think that the ultimate flexibility is that we don't need excessive government. I mean, I read that we've already got three departments in this recommendation. We've got finance, administration, and health. And we're creating another new one. We're creating something called SMART that it's going to have five employees of its own. And I'm a little confused as to how we could call this streamlining government, because it actually looks like we're just reorganizing and putting everybody somewhere else. So what I was trying to ask is, does the fact that this amendment doesn't talk about unclassified employees, does that give you flexibility to reduce the size of government?
Commissioner Anderson.
Thank you. You could argue that it does. There are about 140 employees at Doer. Many of them, most of them, need to continue to do exactly what they're doing. I can tell you that Doer has been hit by the budget cuts, as a lot of the state agencies have. I don't remember the original number. I think there were over 200 four or five years ago. There are other changes besides the immediate FTE issue that need to occur within Doer. Doer needs to do things differently also. It needs to have a stronger HR function within it can have this through shifting of employees. There's also issues of, frankly, the number of state agencies that we have out there. The governor has 24 or more commissioners that directly report to him, and that makes no sense, especially when we're doing things together already. Right now, Doer and Finance do a lot of things together. It also gives the state agency, really Finance, a lot more knowledge and control over the issues that really drive state government, budgeting and human resources. And that's a very, very important function, to have those things very closely linked. Streamlining isn't always lowering numbers of FTEs. Streamlining is also doing things better and doing things differently, and that's what this creates.
Mr. Chairman,
Representative.
Well, then all I would add to this is because it's being marketed to us as a, in effect, it's implied that it's a reduction of government. From this report, the consolidation recommendation, I commend you and your staff for what you're doing in such a rapid fashion. The only thing I would point out is that aside from the 34 employees that are handling 2,800 workers' compensation claims, mm-hmm. which are referenced in here, and the five employees that would be manning this SMART mm-hmm. group that helps with the transition, I think that this this type of an amendment actually frustrates the purpose by saying that now if you can reduce the size of government, this will frustrate your ability to do that in some respects, because it requires you then to place someone in another job in some other department. So I would not support it. I don't think it's in the spirit of what the governor has recommended in terms of not only streamlining the process and reorganizing the duties, so as you point out, they work better, but I think it saddles the administration with a responsibility that is intended under these circumstances. So I would not favor this at all.
Mr.
Mr. Representative Pawlowski.
Mr. Chair, and to Representative Emmer, but to the committee, when we met with the commissioner and then with Governor Pawlowski, and there's going to be another meeting with Governor Pawlowski this Friday to continue this process, Representative Kahn is fond of giving us history. I've eliminated state planning. I eliminated the Higher Education Coordinating Board. Was fortunate to be part of eliminating the profile of learning and a number of other excessive government programs. What I found out is that if you don't take some small steps first, it's difficult to do. And while this language does initially protect certain positions, it also allows for shared resources. And those shared resources will also save money. In the 21st century with technology, we shouldn't have to have multiple systems in place in all of these agencies. We should be able to share these systems. And in the long run, I see this as a way to share those resources and get a much bigger bang for the tax dollar. Now, it doesn't protect these forever. This is an initial step. But I would hope with our conversations with the governor on Friday, you will see some substantive bills coming forward.
Mr. Chairman, can I ask a question?
Representative Emmer, sure.
Mr. Chairman, Chairman Pawlowski, I do know your reputation, and I guess maybe I change my mind if I can ask this question. Would you clarify what you just said? Does that mean that this is one of those small compromises that is necessary in order to accomplish what it is we're setting out to do?
Representative Pawlowski, this place is about compromise.
Well, and Mr. Chairman, Representative Pawlowski, you know I'm all about compromise. So, so while I appreciate that, then perhaps I would change my opinion so that you can accomplish the goals that you're setting out for. Thank you very much.
Well, Mr. Chair,
and Representative Pawlowski,
members of the committee, I think the initial thing here is this was done so fast. When we met, and I'm serious, we were looking at a year, coming back in a year and having legislation in maybe a year, and it's taken less than a month, and that's commendable. I think it does show that the Plenty administration is moving in a proactive way on reform, and we want to assist the administration in that.
Thank you. Questions to the amendment, Representative Kahn.
Yes. Mr. Chairman, the critical thing about the amendment, Representative Emmer, if you look at it, is that it doesn't protect the position. It protects the employee. And if you look at state government hiring, you see that there's people being hired for many, people being hired and going away for all sorts of reasons. This is then a sensible way to do this.
Representative Anderson.
Separate note here. First, commend Commissioner Anderson and Representative Pawlowski for bringing this bill forward. I just had a question, though. I'm looking at the amendment, and it says no action taken after July 2009 shall be considered as a result of reorganization for the purpose of the section. What happens if, you know, in these new positions, an employee isn't meeting performance standards? What options does management have to make sure that performance measures are met? Because as I'm seeing this, this doesn't give them a lot of flexibility going for that whole year in between.
Commissioner Anderson?
That's a good point. And there is no flexibility, I guess, under that sense. But I can tell you that the employees, most of the employees that are there are long-term employees, and they would have been disciplined or let go a long time ago if that would be an issue. I think this is a compromise measure. Again, I want to commend everyone. We did this in a month, and everyone's on board, and that's a pretty unusual thing here at the legislature. We believe that this will work, that this can work. It protects the employees for about a two-year period. This was the same language that was in the deed reorganization. We don't have any issue with it, really, and again, I think it can work. But you are correct that I don't see that happening because it would have occurred already. So.
Representative Anderson.
Mr. Chair, Commissioner Anderson. And I took that into consideration before asking, realizing that these are senior staff people that have been around. My only concern is that we may be putting them in positions that they haven't been in before, and obviously that, you know, raises concern about they might be doing different things that they haven't tried before, and then it gets into performance. And all I ask is that maybe if you can give some consideration before this legislation is finalized to kind of looking at those areas and giving the management folks some flexibility so that they can address those issues instead of having to wait a full year before they can get some things changed.
Seeing no one else to speak on the amendment, Representative Pawlowski has moved the A1 amendment as amended. All those in favor of the A1 amendment as amended, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed? The amendment is adopted. We are back to the main motion. Are there other amendments? Are there any questions on the main motion? Is there public testimony on the main motion, HF 1048? All right. Then we will Vote on the main motion. Representative Pulaski renews his motion to adopt HF 1048 and re-refer to finance. All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, say nay.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Motion prevails. Representative Morgan, thank you. Next on the agenda is House File 132. Representative Mahoney is up there. There he is.
Okay.
Representative Mahoney, I'm going to move House File 132 be recommended to pass and be re-referred to finance. We believe it has to go to finance to be re-referred to its next stop. So.
That is. Thank you, Mr. Thank you, Chair Pulaski. That is correct. It has to go to finance.
So, Representative Mahoney, do you want to present your bill?
I will. Welcome to the committee. As the technology people get going and my witnesses will, testifiers will get ready. When the technology catches up. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, thank you for hearing this bill. As the chair of the Bioscience and Emerging Technologies Committee, I've had the opportunity to hear firsthand that our state needs to make a substantial commitment to ensure the future of the bio industry in our state. I've heard from the bio industry officials, from pharmaceutical industry, from higher ed representatives, other state and local officials. House File 132 does just that by providing a mechanism for building the next five biomedical research facilities at the University of Minnesota over the next 10 years. The university is at capacity with relation to research facilities in the area of medical bioscience. And this legislation provides a long-term solution for the university and the state to maintain our leadership role in this important area of research. Section 3, which starts on page 2, line 14 of House File 132, falls under the preview of this committee, as we are asking that you allow the establishment of an authority which would oversee a creative program for building these important buildings. I have with me today Dr. Frank Serra, Senior Vice President for Health Science at the University, and Richard Fritzenruder, who I have asked to present you with an overview of this legislation. You know, I've known him for 3 years now, and I still don't get his name right. It should be...
President Mahoney, I prefer that pronunciation of it.
You prefer that to some of the other things you've...
Well,
never mind.
President Mahoney, his background here was he dealt with our finances here, and I think that's what he used to do to us sometimes.
and you allowed that to happen, Chair? Chair Pulaski, I am...
Representative Mahoney, I was much younger at the time. I'd never allow it now.
There you go. Well, when I'm done with these remarks, I'm going to have these gentlemen present an overview of this part of the bill. And then I've got some amendments to present, and you must have them in your packet, knowing the efficiency of your staff, and I would take questions at that particular time if the chair and the committee would fill out.
Representative Mahoney, is Dr. Serra first? Or
we'll let Dr.
Serra. Mr. Fitzenreiter, which one?
Dr. Serra.
Dr. Serra, welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself for the record.
Good morning. My name is Frank Serra. I'm the Senior Vice President for Health Sciences at the university. Thank you, Chair Pulaski, members of the committee, and Representative Mahoney for an opportunity to give you some information about the Biomedical Sciences Facilities Authority. First, I would also like to acknowledge the presence of Regent Hunter, who is also joining us this morning. This bill is really about the future of the biosciences in the state of Minnesota and the industry that it contains, whether it's agricultural, health, or industrial. The university is the engine that drives that future, and it really needs an investment in facilities. The reason we need this investment in facilities is that right now our research facilities are at capacity. In the recruitment of the Cancer Center director, I literally used up the last space that we have to recruit into and that we can plan to recruit into. The productivity of the faculty and research has never been higher. We're now ranked 9th to 10th in public universities in the data that just came out from the federal government. Our research infrastructure is such that we're barely meeting the needs of the faculty at this time to perform research, and we lack the key ingredient for recruiting top-shelf faculty, which is predictability in space. The last recruit that we did in moving ahead our whole drug development platform took us 2.5 years and would not have happened had the Minnesota Department of Health facility not been available so that we could use the top floors of that for Professor Georg. Minnesota is in a position of great strength in the biosciences, but we need the investment now if we are to retain that strength and really capture what is ours to capture for the future of the state. What's listed on this slide is a number of reasons why we are currently in that position. The problem we have is that if we're standing still, we're falling behind. Our competitors and neighbors are making the investment in research capacity that we need to make. And here are some examples from the top 5 public research universities. UCLA, 4 new research buildings. University of Wisconsin, 200,000 square feet of a new research complex, and so on, as is outlined in this slide. This capacity is critical for us to recruit the faculty to drive this engine, to drive the future of the biosciences in Minnesota. We do have a niche. The faculty have worked together in areas of convergence of engineering and health sciences in such areas as cancer, neuroscience, cardiac disease, drug device development, and diabetes. We have focused, and we're ready to recruit. We can recruit. We know that we can successfully recruit 95%+ of the time the faculty that we want. But we need the facilities for them to work in. It's not the bricks and mortar per se. It's the work they do in those facilities for those cures, preventions, and treatments.
Dr. Sarah, just excuse me one second. I want to go back to the slide you had with UCLA, University of Michigan, University of Wisconsin, University of Washington, and the fifth one. Are you saying that all 5 of these have a system in place that's similar to this legislation, and that's why these buildings are being built?
Chair Pawlowski, no, I'm not saying that. I'm saying they are making the investments. The University of California system, for instance, and they're using a variety of mechanisms to fund them. For instance, University of California San Francisco is relying on donations as well as state funds to build theirs. And if you go on in Wisconsin, that's state money. Michigan is a combination model for building those facilities, some state, some university. But they have not established anything like the Facilities Authority, which I think when Fitz explains it to you, it is a unique model.
So, Dr. Sarah, to be clear, none of the 5 are doing what you're asking us to do.
Representative Pawlowski, in a sense, that's correct. The Biomedical Facilities Authority is a unique funding mechanism that gives us certain advantages nationally. One, it's a major national statement that this state is really interested in the future of the biosciences, and it understands the university is the engine for that. It gives us a tool for the predictability that we need to do that recruitment. It retains the accountability that the legislature needs. But these other states have made the commitment, I think this is the other side of the answer to your question, to make the investment in facilities capacity.
Well, Dr. Chair, I'm always intrigued by PowerPoint because sometimes it's powerful one way and sometimes it's powerful another. Thank you.
If I go back to Minnesota's niche, the university is the engine that will drive the partnerships with the public and private sector in health, industrial, and agricultural applications. The investment will benefit the whole state, which is briefly described on the following map. Now, this map is not the university's. This comes from the Biobusiness Alliance of Minnesota, which is the private sector group that is developing the plan for the development of the biosciences and the private investments that are needed. They are looking at developing a life science community with an accelerator and other support services for startup companies next, and I repeat, next to where these buildings will be located on the university campus. From there, that life sciences community, these new companies and new technologies can then spread to the state and the various biosciences parks that are being set up. Now, with that, I'll return this over to Mr. Fitzenreuter for an explanation of how this would work.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee.
Welcome to the committee.
Thank you. Members of the committee and Mr. Chairman, this bill establishes a process.
Mr. Fitzenreuter, why don't you identify yourself for the record so we really know who you are.
Mr. Chairman, my name is Richard Fitzenreuter, often referred to as Fitz, a little bit like Sharon Prince because of the last name. And I'm the Chief Financial Officer and Treasurer at the University of Minnesota, and I certainly enjoyed my time, my 10 years working in the House, and always supported the House position and conference committee.
Mr. Fitzenreuter, I appreciate that. Some of the members would have wished you would have supported us a little more equally than others, but that's another story, and we'll share that later.
Mr. Chairman, members, this bill then establishes a process to extend $279 million of state GO bonds, which would pay for 90% of the cost of the construction of these facilities, with the University of Minnesota providing an additional 10% match, roughly $31 million. The creation of the facilities authority itself is really rooted in a recognition on our part that this is not a typical way to approach the issuance and funding of capital requests in the state of Minnesota in terms of the way the traditional legislative process works. We certainly could have come to the state and said, we need $279 million. Please give it to us. We'll go build these buildings, and thank you very much. But we recognize the need for accountability and transparency because of the historical nature and the way the state approaches capital projects. As a result, we proposed this authority that would, in essence, be a nine-member. It has 13 members, but nine voting members. It includes four current legislators as non-voting members. It establishes a biomedical sciences research facilities program, provides for the U of M to apply to that authority for the grants. There's criteria in the bill with respect to the university has to, of course, as I said, pay 10% of the cost of the project, be responsible for all the ongoing facility costs, provides an opportunity for us to collaborate in putting grant applications in with another entity that has at least $75 million of federal grants. The application itself that we turn in has specific criteria, including naturally a cost estimate of the project, an assessment of the potential to attract new research grants, which is one of the main features of what we're trying to do here, a detailed operating financial analysis for the project. How are we going to staff it? How are we going to pay for it? What are the facilities costs? A timeline for when that particular project would be done, as well as an assessment of the public benefits from going ahead with the project. So there's an application made to the authority. They render a judgment on it and can approve the project.
The bill also has a provision then on this slide. You can see that what this does is the authority then tells the Commissioner of Finance that it's approved a project. There's a very specific schedule in the bill, roughly a project every 2 years in these increments so that the projects can proceed on a timely basis and the Department of Finance can have some certainty as to when the debt service payments need to be made because this bill does have an impact on the state debt service, that 90% provision. And I will say that up front that this bill does impact and is counted as part of the 3% debt guideline of the state, but they count as each project is authorized. They do not count in its full first authorization. So as each project is authorized by the commission, they will inform the Commissioner of Finance of that approval, and then that particular project's authorization will be factored into the 3% debt guideline of the state.
Mr. Fitzenreiter, to the point of what you're proposing, how would this, if this were in place, how would this impact the university's current budget request?
Mr. Chairman, members, you mean in terms of operating or capital?
Well, both. I'm intrigued again by this proposal, and what I'm getting at is you have a request that's coming before the legislature this bonding cycle. So if this were in place, would I see a commensurate reduction in your bonding request that's currently before the legislature because you would have the authority to put X number of buildings online? Or, and here's my second proposal, would we see actually two bonding proposals from the university, one which you have total control over, this one, and then the second one, which is the one that we have control over, and that doesn't apparently change, that still gets bigger and bigger, but you get this one off to the side that you have total control over and you authorize. Which of the scenarios plays out here?
Mr. Chairman, if this bill was enacted, we would, of course, not be back to the legislature for authorization for these projects because this bill authorizes the facilities authority.
So, Mr. Fitzenreiter, then I would see a reduction in your proposal before the legislature, would I not?
Mr. Chairman, members, I can't speculate at this point about what a president or the Board of Regents may decide in advancing a capital request to the legislature for bioscience-related projects, how big that request would be. That'd be tough for me to estimate. But again, in light of the way we constructed this bill and the transparency and accountability and the fact that we put in the bill there's four non-voting current legislative members, we're not trying to hide the ball in terms of the total capital investment by the state and the University of Minnesota.
Transparency may be the operative phrase here. It appears to be transparent that then the U has two bonding requests, one that they're in control of and one that we're in control of, and that the one that we're in control of will perhaps not see any reduction in totality, and this one moves forward. I mean, if it's totally transparent.
Mr. Chairman, you'll be able to assess whether we're, what I think I hear you saying, you may suggest that we're double dipping.
Well, transparently I am.
And, Mr. Chairman, I just can't, you know, it's not within my purview to predict what the Board of Regents or the President may recommend in those normal capital operating years for other non-biomedical science-related projects.
Representative Kahn.
Mr. Chairman, I would suggest that I think the answer to your question is that each one of these would appear on individual bonding requests at some point in the future, but by putting them all together, one gets an extra degree of certainty, which helps the long-term recruitment that's necessary for this process.
Well, Representative Kahn, my only concern is that the U gets certainty and everyone else that comes before the legislature does not.
Well,
Representative Kahn.
Mr. Chairman, I think what we've heard the witnesses say is that this is an important issue in which we're in competition with the rest of the world and in which there is and in which there are economic benefits to the state that go beyond what many of the other parts of the bonding bill
Well, Representative Kahn, as I pointed out on the previous slide, the five examples that they gave, not one of the five uses this system to get those bonding requests. So we may be in competition, but we're not in competition using this type of a system.
Well,
Mr. Chair.
Representative Mahoney.
Mr. Chair, I think you're missing the point here. You actually have control of this particular bonding request at this particular time, this year. These particular facilities at the university have taken 4, 5, and 8 years to get through. The bioindustry in this particular state used to be top flight, used to be the top dog in the nation. We used to be right below California and Massachusetts. And because of the reluctance of this legislature and this state to make a commitment to this university and its research facilities, we are not there any longer. We have the opportunity today, in this session, to have control over this bonding request and any future bonding requests. We can put in a request for $279 million. If we believe these particular facilities are in good stead and the investment pays back to the state what we ask it to pay back, and I, as the chairman of a committee that has been deeply involved in the biosciences, do believe that this does pay back to the state over the next generation of Minnesotans, this particular investment.
Representative Emmer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I suppose this is for Mr. Fitzenreiter. I think it was last week that we had the president over here at the legislature, and a comment that he made about indicating that he thought that we were going to have to raise taxes to have to deal with certain funding requests, including those that would come to the U, got me to thinking, because I'd seen this proposal already and read the bill. And in the interest of transparency and accountability, Mr. Fitzenreiter, the question I have is, what other funding mechanisms has the university looked at, specifically your department? And I'll give you an example. It seems to me that the university holds a lot of property in the state of Minnesota that sits idle. I'm wondering, have you looked at selling off some of that property to finance construction of these very important buildings? Second, have you entered into any U of M partnerships? Have you approached some of the folks that would benefit most dramatically from this in the private sector, rather than approaching the legislature? Because I think it's somewhat unfair to suggest that it's because of the legislature that the university has fallen behind. I'm interested to know what efforts, since we are looking for leadership from our university, has the university taken, rather than constantly just coming back here and saying, look, the trough is full, let's see if we can either do it through a bonding request or maybe we'll raise taxes. What other funding mechanisms have been looked at by the University of Minnesota?
Mr. Fitzmaier. Mr. Chairman, let me answer your first and to begin with respect to, for example, land sales. Yes, the university does hold a substantial amount of real estate in the state. As you may have heard recently, one of the big efforts we have underway is down in Rosemont at Umore Park, and the inevitable, we think, probably over the next 25 years, development of that parcel. And the president and the Board of Regents have made it clear that we're interested in funds off of that to be dedicated to things like student scholarships and other activities at the University of Minnesota. So yes, we are actively pursuing that. We have other parcels that we're looking at. So we recognize that there are that we have value in land and are pursuing those where we can. On the issue of approaching the private sector, for example, for capital projects, we do that regularly and actively. I will tell you that other states are, and we talked about this at the last hearing with some folks, other states, I think, you take a state like Michigan, where frankly they don't, the state of Michigan does not provide a great deal of capital budget support to Michigan. And their corporate sector does step up and help fund those buildings. That's been a harder sell in Minnesota. I don't know if it's Minnesota's culture
the tradition of the state paying for capital projects. I don't know what it is, but that's heavy lifting. We've been successful, but it's tough to get the corporate sector in to do it. I know Dr. Sarah probably has some firsthand experience on that.
Dr. Sarah.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I think this is a good question to have asked. We do have some success in private donations with buildings. The best example is the Translational Research Facility. It's about a $40 million facility. We had $10 million of donations, and it took us 4 years to get the matching state appropriations because it went through one bonding session, was vetoed by a governor, had to go back and be redone. And that really cost us in the race those 4 years. Another point I would make to you is the private sector prefers to partner with us not so much on facilities, but on program support. So we have very strong relationships with 3M, Medtronic, and small companies like MGI Pharma who fund faculty research, who fund faculty chairs that allow us to recruit and retain, and they fund other aspects of programs like equipment that is expensive and we need. So we have very strong, productive partnerships with the private sector, but they prefer not to give bricks and mortar most of the time. I think there's another point to be made here that Representative Kahn was getting at. And I'll say this two ways. If the state, my opinion, really wants to retain its device industry, really wants to retain the biomedical sciences and grow it in the state of Minnesota, there is only one engine that can drive that, and that's the University of Minnesota. There is no other public or private institution that can do it. Hence, my frame for this is what's really on the table here is the future of the biosciences in Minnesota and the ability of this university, and I'll speak a little bit more about urgent needs in a minute, that we need to compete. One last comment. Some states are simply providing cash up front for their universities to build buildings. New Jersey's the last example of that. Harvard's another example of that. So I think this is a long-range view, but this is the opportunity. If this door closes, we will be a fly-by state. We cannot catch up.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Emmer.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, if I might.
Representative Mahoney. That's like the sponsor. Representative Mahoney.
Mr. Chair. Emmer, I didn't mean to cut you off, but I will do that in this sense, that the preview of this committee is the makeup of this particular authority. Whether the bonding issues are right or the bonding issues are wrong, whether the dollar amount is correct or not correct, or the principle of bioscience research is correct or not correct, goes into the Bioscience Committee, the Higher Ed Committee, and the Bonding Committee.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Emmer.
I would respectfully disagree with Representative Mahoney from the standpoint that we're talking about a policy here of funding that has not been done before, apparently, under these circumstances. Mr. Chairman, I'd ask for some information I'd like from Mr. Fitzenrider. I would like an accounting, an itemization of the current land holdings of the University of Minnesota across the state of Minnesota. And then I'd like to point out to the committee that the very land that Mr. Fitzenrider is referencing down in Rosemount, I understand if the policy that we're talking about was to utilize that land for development purposes as opposed to setting up this arrangement where the government will just continue to throw bonding money at it, would serve the same purpose. That if it were developed over time, that they could actually, the leadership over at the University of Minnesota, could actually fund construction of these buildings with current resources. And that's why I would like to see that itemization, Mr. Chairman, so I could further evaluate that.
Representative Emmer, I see Mr. Fitzenreiter taking notes. And then to Representative Mahoney's issue, members, I had Mr. Shepherd do an analysis of the bill on February 16th. I'm looking at Mr. Shepherd's memo, and in the memo, in the first section, and this is Representative Mahoney's point, the entire bill may be within the jurisdiction of government operations because most of the sections either create or assign duties to the authority that is being created in this bill. So we have a rather broad purview here with this piece of legislation because of the uniqueness of what the university is asking for, and that's why my questions were centered on what other states are doing and the, I would say, extraordinary request that's before us from the university, even though it is transparent. And I would say this might be the most transparent thing I've seen here in a long time. So with that, Representative Winkler is next.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like to just first congratulate you for submitting such an extraordinary proposal because I think it is innovative, and I think it's right on the mark. In fact, my question is really whether it does enough, whether it's enough money, whether it's enough of an investment to compete with the other five challenges that you have listed in your presentation. And as my question is, I recall that there are some unique funding sources for each or at least some of the other institutions, as I recall, Wisconsin, UCLA, and maybe UCSF have each had some unique kinds of funding arrangements that have allowed them to make this kind of investment. And I wonder if you could just be specific about them and to show what, in fact, we are up against in terms of innovative funding mechanisms.
Is that to Dr. Sarah?
Dr. Sarah.
Yes. Okay, Dr. Sarah.
Mr. Chair, Representative, I will, to the best of my recollection, and I'd be happy to put that together for you in more detail. I know University of California, San Francisco well because I actually visited there. And what happened there is a major private multi-billion dollar philanthropic institution actually worked with the university to establish a foundation on campus. The foundation actually built the building and then leased it back to the university, and the university faculty are the ones that populate the building. On the other hand, the University of California Board of Regents has authorized billions of dollars of expenditures in biomedical sciences across their system. That's the state support. In another one, UCLA, I know about one or two of the buildings where there is private donations that came into that, a major portion of university funding, and then a major portion of state funding. So you see all kinds of hybrids for this. So I can put together for you a more complete survey of that. And then our neighbors to the east fund with cash up front for their public institutions from the states. I believe you had another question, and I can't remember what that was.
Representative Winkler.
The other question is whether your proposal is enough. Why this, in many ways, more modest proposal compared to some of these others would be sufficient for Minnesota to be competitive?
Dr. Sam.
Representative Pawlowski, members of the committee, if you go back to that slide about the investments that Minnesota has been making, so we are well positioned, we sat down and we calculated what we would need to get where we need to be. So this is a very measured, careful request. And once these buildings are in place and are populated, we will have the faculty and the facilities and equipment to push out the technology to promote the biosciences in the state and to move us up. I humbly apologize, Mr. Chair.
Dr.
I'm sure it's nothing of any importance. I humbly apologize. I forgot to turn it off. So we're pretty sure that with this investment, several things will happen. One, it will give us a national kick for recruiting the top shelf faculty. They'll know they're going to go into these new facilities that support the new science and the areas the faculty can grow in. And it will give us approximately 35 to 40 new faculty per building, 120 to 160 support personnel per building. And with that and the other space that we will develop going forward, we will have the 300 new faculty that we need.
Representative Winkle. Just one follow-up comment, Mr. Chair. It would seem to me if we used other states then as an example, a more ordinary system of funding would be for us to simply appropriate $280 million directly to the University of Minnesota for these buildings, and I actually think that they're to be commended for coming up with something that's much more innovative and I think more fiscally responsible for us at this point in time and yet meeting their needs.
Well, Representative Winkler, you may have missed in 2003 and 2004 when we cut the university's base by almost $200 million, and they haven't recovered yet. So we're still living with that reality, too. But your point is well taken. This bill would not be needed if we simply funded higher education based on its needs. And that is a point that we, that should be the first point that's before the entire legislature. But to that, Representative Kalin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Dr. Sarah, Mr. Fitzenrider, Representative Mahoney. My uncle is the head of an angiogenesis lab at a place out that for a school and a little-known school in Cambridge, Massachusetts, that I like to refer to as the University of Minnesota of the East. And I think it's important to recognize that we're competing not only with the public institutions, but also the highly funded private institutions as well for the top-tier faculty. And I recently had the pleasure of speaking with Dr. Richard Florida, who worked for about 10 years at Carnegie Mellon in Pittsburgh from the bottom up, building an infrastructure in a partnership with Lucent, I think it was Lucent Technologies, and a real successful public-private partnership that he put his heart and soul into from the ground up, helped build the critical mass for this company and the Brain Trust and this germinating incubator of talent. And then a few years later, after he had moved on, he opened the paper and read front page, Lucent moves to Boston. I mean, that's if the medical devices and biosciences are the future of Minnesota, we have the foundation here. And without the investment, we will lose that critical mass. And it's important to sort of look at the global perspective here of who we're competing against and what the consequences are of not having that critical mass, of losing that. So I commend you on stepping forward and hope that you will entertain, continue to push the envelope in terms of the funding sources and the especially the private partnership part of this. But to making the best, to Representative Winkler's question, and sort of making the most of this investment that we do make, I'm wondering, I think that, and perhaps Mr. Shepard can help us clarify, that because these are our requests, that are capital bond investments, they will be much more energy efficient than the current energy code, that they will have to meet the sustainable design guidelines, and therefore we'll reduce our life cycle operating costs here. Is that correct?
Correct, sir.
That's correct, Mr. Chair.
And that, thank you, Mr. Chair. And the energy code is going to be strengthened in the next year, most likely. And so, therefore, operating 30% better than the strengthened energy code is going to further maximize the investment and the return that we get on that as we operate these buildings down the road, correct?
Mr. Chair, Representative, it's 1,000% true. I would point out one other thing, that we've undergone a great deal of learning in how to build buildings to support the new science. And in the last one we completed, which is being carried over into the one we're now beginning to build, we are able to reduce the amount of research space that a faculty needs by about 33% and increase the productivity commensurate with that. So we're using less space per investigator and getting more productivity per investigator, and they're very happy with it. I do run those surveys just to see how those are working. I think there's another point that's important for the point you just made, and that's that, yes, we do rely on the state to help us build the infrastructure to support research, much of which is bricks and mortar. There's no question about that. That, we believe, is the nature of the partnership we have with the state. But understand, when you fully load these with the faculty, with the equipment, with the salary lines, compensation, with the cost of research, and understanding that the National Institutes of Health does not fund the total direct and indirect cost of research. It funds about 75% of it, and they're the best paying agency. We have to cross-subsidize, and in health sciences, we typically do that from the private practice plan. And that's part of their role, for instance, in the medical school. So if you fully load this up, once a building is built, most of the long-term cost is actually borne by the university. And we worked that out in one model, and I can't remember the numbers off the top of my head. But it's just another piece of the partnership that I think is required for the growth and retention of the biosciences industry in this state. I also am well familiar with this little side college in Massachusetts that you're talking about. It's a very modest description, I might add.
Representative Roth.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And, you know, I'm always interested, and I think we should always be looking at ways to do things differently, ways to do things new, and ways to reform the system. One thing I am concerned about, however, Representative Mahoney, is that we have seemed to have confused our bonding years with our budget years and vice versa, and I'm a little concerned in a government reform type view of this, that this is just an additional bonding proposal in a non-bonding year. And while I am appreciative of it, I'm wondering about the timing and what your view of bringing this proposal forward when we have a bonding year set up next year or last year that we could have furthered discussion. I know there was a lot of discussion about it last year. It didn't make it through the process. Wondering why this is not being brought forward in the typical bonding year next year.
Representative Mahoney or the university, whoever wishes to respond.
Well, I'm sure that might get multiple responses, but you know, last year I wasn't in control and I wasn't able to force this particular bill any farther than it went to. And
Representative Mahoney, I believe this is Representative Abrams' bill last year, wasn't it?
That is correct.
It made its capital investment and it didn't pass in capital investment.
It did not pass out of capital investment. It's structured so it's a different, it's not included in the bonding bill itself. It needed to go to the floor to have a vote on the floor. It passed in the Senate, I believe it was 64-0, 51-15, something along those particular lines. My numbers are not as good as the accountants. And why is it coming up this year? Because I believe it's already a year late. We don't want to delay it another year. We have states all around us that are trying to overtake us. And in the Bioscience Committee, I cited a number of companies that started in Minnesota and are no longer here. And many parts of it were the fact that over the last 20 years, we in the state decided to start looking at what was doable rather than what is possible. And this is a bill that allows us to think of in terms of what's possible rather than what's doable.
Representative Mahoney, to Representative Brown's point, and I'll go back here in a second, if this bill would become law, wouldn't technically every year the university has this authority be a bonding year for the U? It could be, couldn't it? Under this?
Technically it could. I think it's going to be controlled more by the construction cycle and the ability to actually build these buildings. You can't, there's not enough construction workers in the state to put these type of buildings up, put all the power plants that are on the drawing boards and repairs and all the other construction to do these things in one year or one every year. So it's probably got at least a 24-month or better time frame.
Representative Brown.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And Representative Mahoney, then, you know, it seems like we're reducing our need for a bonding year. I mean, if we can do all this stuff that we really want to do, I mean, we all juggle priorities. And if this is deemed to be a priority, I'm wondering why we then continue with a bonding year when we do these bonding proposals in a budget year. So I'm wondering maybe that we could work on a friendly amendment to your bill that reduces government, reforms government, and has us meet only every other year. And maybe you view that as a friendly amendment to this bill, because I think it would certainly help us reform government here from this committee standpoint, Mr. Chairman, and I certainly would hope that we could go in that direction.
Yeah, Representative Brown, should this bill become law, the university would have, in effect, control over this sum for, I think it's a 10-year period, and they would be able to go on and bond without us up to that sum for 10 years. So my previous statement was every year would be a bonding year for the U. And then they would come back in our bonding year with a bonding proposal that may or may not, according to Mr. Fitzenreiter, be reduced by the amount that they're bonding on their own under this authority. Representative Hilty.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Two things, really. Representative Mahoney, my understanding, to kind of follow up on Representative Brad's initial question, if this bill did pass in this session, the immediate implication for bonding would be the $16 million. Is that correct?
Representative Mahoney.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Hilty, that's correct.
Thank you. And then, Mr. Chair and members, when I first learned of this proposal, I had a number of questions about it. It is an innovative and somewhat unusual proposal. The thing I came to realize about it is kind of connected to what we did last night in passing the renewable energy standard, which we should have done some time ago. One of the consequences of our not doing that when we first had the proposal and realized what was coming in terms of our energy requirements and constraints, one of the consequences was that we lost the opportunity to have a major manufacturer of a major wind industry manufacturer locate in Minnesota. The reason that they did not locate in Minnesota and chose Pennsylvania instead was that we did not have a standard. We did not have any commitment at that point that they could have confidence in that we meant to go forward with this development in Minnesota. So they chose to locate where there was such a commitment made by the state government. I think we have a comparable situation here, in which what we have is the opportunity to say up front that we are making a commitment. And we're inviting investment, and the investment that we're inviting is what's really necessary. Buildings do not do research. They do not come up with innovative ideas. It's people that do that. And my understanding of this proposal, which I think is correct, is that part of the reasoning, at least, is that it does illustrate a commitment that makes it possible to recruit the people that would make this a long-term success. And without some kind of commitment up front, that will be somewhere between difficult and impossible. So, Mr. Chair and members, I think that even though this is a somewhat unusual proposal, it's nonetheless proposal. It's nonetheless something that we really should adopt, because we need to be telling the world that we have commitments to things that are important ongoing, and that everyone can benefit from.
Representative Pat.
Mr. Chairman and Dr. Sarah and Mr. Fitzenreuter. I have a couple of related questions, and they don't need to be answered right now. I can just have them. I can have them later. One, we all know that the start of the new biomedical era occurred with the recombinant DNA discoveries and so forth. And one of the primary things that happened was that all the people involved in that got together and said, you know, we just can't go ahead and advance science. We also have to worry about the ethical and legal things about what they're doing. And so one of the things that was done at that time for all governments, certainly in NIH and probably I think for all government funding, was the establishment of a program called ELSI, which was funds for looking at the ethical, legal, and social implications of that research. Now, I don't think it's appropriate to put, and it was, I believe, 3-5% of the research budget went to ELSI projects. I don't think it's appropriate to put that on a building request, but I wondered if you have any comments of the thought of putting an ELSI program in for the research requests that will fill these buildings. That's the first one. The second one is that something in the last session of the legislature actually attached to the stadium bonding bill was a program for looking at the impact of the university on the neighborhoods around that, and a very thoughtful report has come out which is actually asking for the university to put more investment into improving the livability of the neighborhoods around the university, of which I gather this will greatly impact as I look and see where they're going. Now, one of the things I do know is I do know that some of these universities that were in not necessarily the ones at your list, but I certainly know it's true of Harvard, Yale, and Princeton, have put a large amount of effort into the neighborhoods around the university and into doing things like trying to encourage faculty to live in those neighborhoods and so forth. So, the plan, I'm not asking you to revise a new plan. The plan is out from last year's study, and I guess I'm asking for what kind of assurances we're going to have that the university will make some commitment to that plan. And then the third thing is I'd love to see what this timeline of the decline of the university was, when we were the biomedical, bioscience leaders and when we started falling behind. I don't expect that to be told to me now, but I'd like those three things. I'd like some response to those three things. Right now, I'd just like the assurance that I'll get a response.
Sir, without specificity, I guess.
Yeah.
Mr. Chair, Representative Kahn, I'm a little confused. If you want the assurance that I will get
no.
this information, I will
no,
give you
I want
that.
The assurance that they're going
to
be consistent.
Representative Kahn, Dr. Sir, if you want to delay answering that, that's fine, because I think that those are rather broad questions, and it's unfair in some respects to try to get an answer from you today.
That's what I'm suggesting, is I will respond
okay.
to these.
That's all I'm asking.
I will do that.
Okay. Representative Emmer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just in comment on Representative Hilty's analysis, he and I both agree this is very important, as do I think everybody else in the room. It's just the policy that we're setting going forward. I would suggest, Representative Hilty, that based on the analysis that you provided that we need to do this, that you would support a bill that I might offer to eliminate the income tax in the state of Minnesota, because if we do that, that would encourage everybody from the surrounding states to come to Minnesota, because this is clearly a better place to live than Iowa, Wisconsin, South Dakota, North Dakota. I would suggest that there are other ways to do this. And I think the comment was made by one of the testifiers at the outset that when in response to one of my questions about it's heavy lifting. Heavy lifting trying to attract private dollars is one thing, but it's heavy lifting when you're trying to find other methods to finance this. And I don't think we're looking at, I think we're avoiding the heavy lifting. I think this is the easy way out. You come to the legislature and you try to set up a bonding system where you can just continue to bond on your own. I think the university has the assets. The university should have the leadership to find a way to do this within their current structure. And I look forward to working with you on my income tax proposals.
Members, we have one more bill on the agenda, and we have five amendments to this bill. Representative Paulson is waiting patiently, so what I'm going to do is just lay this over temporarily. I want Representative Paulson to come down and get to his bill and then bring you back, because I don't think we're going to finish today no matter what. And I would like to get Representative Paulson those out. So I want to lay this bill over temporarily. And Representative Paulson, if you
could. Mr. Chair.
You have Representative Mahoney.
What time does your committee end today?
Well, we're supposed to end at 9:30.
Okay.
So, Representative Mahoney, right now I'm going to lay this over. Representative Paulson, if you'd come down, please. Representative Paulson, I'm going to move House File 376 be recommended to pass and be re-referred to the Finance Committee. I believe you have an open appropriation in it, and definitely you'd have to go to Finance. So, Representative Paulson, with that, would you present your welcome to the committee, and please present your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, members. The bill before you is to create a public searchable database web on a website that will be made available for all state grants and contracts that are issued and provided by the state of Minnesota. I think the goal of the bill, actually, I should mention, members, that this is modeled after a federal effort that has actually been successful, that was a bipartisan effort by U.S. Senators Tom Coburn and Barack Obama at the federal level to open some more transparency and create sort of a Google government or Google searchable website database for contracts and grants at the federal level. This is modeled similarly after that proposal. I've been working on this since last summer, and in the meantime, we've had other issues come forward from the legislative auditor about the state grants programs, and I think this bill would clearly making this information available and searchable by the public in terms of what grants are out there, for the amounts of the grants, what the grants are used for, so the public can better see what we are indeed appropriating money for, makes sense, and certainly what I think in this day of technology be easy to do, and that's basically the proposal, Mr. Chair. And I think I have Marcia Abner from the Council of Nonprofits is here. Minnesota Council of Nonprofits would be happy to make some comments if you'd like as well, Mr. Chair.
All right. Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself for the record.
Thank you, sir. Mr. Chair and members of the committee, my name is Marcia Abner. I'm the Public Policy Director at the Minnesota Council of Nonprofits, and I appreciate the opportunity to come before you again. We want to speak briefly in support of this legislation. It is consistent with the overall position that we have voiced here, supporting transparency and accountability in state grants and contracts. It is indeed consistent with that effort to make sure that we understand where the money is going. There are three parts of this that we are particularly supportive of and excited about. One is that it is inclusive. When we looked at the Office of the Legislative Auditor's report, it was restricted to particular types of grants. This will allow you as members of the legislature and all of us to have a better look at where the money is. A second part that we think is really excellent is the requirement that the source of funds be identified. We annually do a report on the nonprofit economy. We are looking at all of the sources of revenues, whether they are fees or contracts or grants. Understanding the source of funds will be very helpful to everyone in the field trying to understand the mix of revenues that support nonprofits and private sector efforts. And again, the clarification between what is a grant and what is a contract is very helpful. So we appreciate that you've brought this bill forward and we support it.
Thank you. Representative Paulson, I believe, former Representative Rhodes, welcome back to the committee, and please identify yourself for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members. Jim Rhodes, Department of Administration. We are the policy is not what the issue for us is, it's the process. There's some things in this legislation that's going to have a big price tag, and I'm not sure we want to go there. So I've talked to the author about maybe hopefully being able to have a work in progress till it gets to the next stop. Our concerns are that we currently do not maintain the data. Representative Paulson still wants to go back 10 years, and that's in the finance department's as a warehouse of this, and they may have to be involved in that process. Some of the data, particularly grants and MnDOT highway construction contracts, are difficult to ascertain the varying methods of how they do that stuff. And we also need some clarity about contracts. Does this include every purchase order? By general definition, we think it does. If so, the state has over 300,000 purchase orders alone each fiscal year, and that does not include contracts, grants, but does include process as orders for as little as $1. So we think we need to try to get this so it'd be a little more simplified. The issue of having the transparency is great. As you know, because Marcia Abner talked about the idea of having a grants management situation where we can have it in Department of Administration, it's in the state government finance bill, would allow us to do a lot of this stuff and set up the criteria so it can be done in the future, but it's the other issues that I talked about that make it problematical at this point. But we do want to work with the authors.
Mr. Rhodes, thank you. You picked maybe Transparency Day in government operations, so you picked a good day to come forward. Representative Paulson, you talked to me about those concerns, too, and you are willing to work with the department and other departments as you move forward.
And Mr. Chairman, just to mention the follow-up on that, I think the provision for the 10-year look-back, I think, was something I was looking at as I was looking at putting the bill again together last summer. Obviously, if there's a strong fiscal, and I know Representative Kahn and others on the State Government Finance Committee are going to have concerns about that. My interest, at least in today's world, is to be able to at least get something going on a going-forward basis, and we should be able to do that, Mr. Chairman.
No, Representative Paulson, I share your concern, too. This is something that we should do. We should be able to go in and take a look historically at what we've done. Members, any other questions on this? Representative Kalin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll just keep this brief. Representative Paulson and former Representative Rhodes, I'm actually working on a bill that's a similar idea, looking at sort of energy report cards for our state buildings, and then also ultimately hoping to work with our local governments to for all public taxpayer-funded buildings. And I just look forward to talking with both of you, sirs, to figure out whether this is the right, whether I'll introduce a separate bill and we'll just talk about the best way to increase transparency and a little bit of public pressure to be much more efficient about the energy we use in all of our public buildings.
Any further questions on this bill? Representative Brock.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Paulson, thank you for bringing this forward. I'm curious, I seem to recall that you had a bill to change the legislative sessions to a bi-year or every other year. Is that correct?
Representative Paulson.
Representative, Mr. Chair, Representative Brock, yes, I've had that proposal. I see you're fitting that discussion in every bill that's been before.
Mr. Chairman, I just thought since we had Representative Paulson here and it was relevant to the discussion we were having earlier, he might want to work with Representative Mahoney, and I certainly would be happy to facilitate those discussions.
Representative Broad, I'll let those two have a conversation, but right now House File 376 is before us, but it is clever of you to work this in. Any other questions on this proposal? Representative Kahn.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Falk, I want to commend you on how excellent this bill is and what a really good idea is. Isn't this a lot more fun than being the attack dog majority leader?
Representative Paulson, you do not have to answer that.
Mr. Chair, Representative Kahn, this is one of the bills I'm obviously working with you on as a co-author of the bill, as well as some other proposals I'm working on. And so I've always tried to pride myself on working on a bipartisan basis, and we'll continue to do that.
Good answer, Representative. All right, any other questions to the bill? None. Then I'll renew my motion that House File 376 be recommended to pass and be referred to the Finance Committee. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion prevails. Representative Mahoney, let's get you and your group back up here. All right. Representative Mahoney, if you want to, we may have time to at least address an amendment, or if you have other people who wish to testify. We're not going to be able to finish today, obviously, but since we've got five amendments. But we'll bring you back first thing tomorrow.
Mr. Chair, I'm more than willing to throw all my amendments in the wastebasket if we get a vote today.
Representative Mahoney, I think the amendments are something that the committee would, through because of transparency, we would like to look at.
I always thought this bill was transparent as it stood, but
I think this is the most transparent thing I've seen in 20 years, and I'm going to stick to that statement.
I think that you may as well just leave this on the table. I am already late for my next appointment.
All right. You're up first tomorrow. You are first on the agenda tomorrow. And with that, members, meeting is